Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode number 144 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And as everybody knows, 144 is a gross, and the show's been pretty gross so far. But no one's actually heard that part yet. So anyway, my name is Russ. I'm K5TUX, and I'm the co-host of the show along with Pete, VE2XPL, who is back from the dead.
Woohoo! If you're the co-host, does that make me the host?
No, that makes you the co-host.
I am back from the dead indeed, resurrected and raring to go.
Okay. So our newly found Lazarus is back on the show. What? Did you have something else to add?
No.
Okay. We also have Cheryl.
Anything else for the rest of the show?
Cheryl, lovely YL, who sits across from me and does the podcast with the two of us.
Hello, everyone.
Yay, we're all here again.
Along with three dogs that may bark anytime now.
Excellent.
I'm not sure the dog part is excellent.
Right.
All right. All right.
No singing Kansas. Okay.
That wasn't Kansas.
No singing
saddle. Obscure
Gene Autry or classic country music or whatever that was. You know, no more of it. And anyway.
Wow.
Now I want to know who sings that.
So now you're going to look it up. You can tell us later. But before you do that, since I have had to talk most of the last two episodes because you weren't here, you get to read the first story.
It's Gene Autry, and Aerosmith did a remix.
Did I not just say Gene Autry?
Yes, you did.
I did. I got it right. Yes, How about that?
Confirming that. Yeah, that's actually pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive because it was a total guess.
Was it really?
It was.
I was sitting here across the table shaking my head. Yes. You know.
It was still a guess on my part, no matter how right it was.
All right. Well, it was very right.
Okay.
I'd like to hear Aerosmith's version, though. But anyways, maybe not tonight.
I'll see if I can find it.
I have it. Anyhow, that's not going to die. It's right here on YouTube. All right. First story, segment one, amateur radio. I was actually, sorry to hear that James Pasterfield of Amateur Radio Newsline is undergoing a heart bypass. Well, sad to hear because, you know, heart bypass isn't something that one aspires to. Fortunately, he's still with us, of course, but he posted last night on the Facebook page. For those of you who don't know, James Pasterfield is the gentleman who runs the Amateur Radio Newsline Facebook page. His call sign is KB7TBT. And he posts on the page, and I quote, "Sorry to interrupt your browsing for a minute here, but things may get a bit delayed in the group. The reason is that I just set up my laptop on the table over my bed in the AnMed Hospital in Anderson, South Carolina. Apparently, the past few weeks, I was having pains and shortness of breath. And, of course, blew it off, like most people usually do. But at 2 a.m. The previous night, he had to call the EMTs, EKG, and the ambulance. And at the hospital, they confirmed that he had a mild heart attack, which is never good. So he's scheduled for open heart bypass surgery on Tuesday. So he states, I'm not laughing at him, of course, but he says, so if things get a bit delayed, understand that I'm going to be somewhat incapacitated for a bit. So there you go. Fortunately, for the most part, there are not many issues to deal with in the group. So this is because you are great folks. So you people who are the members of the Facebook Amateur Radio Newsline, you're all very appreciated by James. So our best wishes to James for a speedy recovery. Hope that goes well on Tuesday. Send them your positive thoughts, people. I don't think I'd want to be on the Amateur Radio Newsline staff because Bill, who's the main guy, WA6ITF, had some sort of obscure house mishap in November, I think, and he was incapacitated in the hospital for a while. So I hope that Amateur Radio Newsline is not cursed. But I thought that was interesting, and I thought I'd mention it for those of you who follow the great source of amateur radio news. And a place where we get a lot of our information.
Absolutely, and we're sorry to hear that he has to go through that, but it sounds like things are okay. They caught it as necessary, and Best wishes from us to you, James, and hopefully everything goes well for you.
On another note, the International Amateur Radio Union, the IARU, is putting together or have put together an emergency telecommunications guide that's available online through their website. So the IARU, or the International Amateur Radio Union's Administrative Council, has approved the publication called the Emergency Telecommunications Guide. The handbook is developed to provide IARU member societies with materials suitable for training their members to participate in emergency events. However, it's also designed to provide guidance for any individual and amateur radio operators who have little or no experience handling emergency communications, and they want to learn about or enhance their ability to participate in such events, or just to have, you know, better understanding of the process. So the publication can also be used in conjunction with other training materials by leaders in the emergency communications community to train radio operators in the basic theory and practice of handling emergency communications traffic. And for those of you who don't know, handling emergency communications traffic is very structured so that it can be very efficient. And if you've listened to any emergency communications net, what you're listening to most of the time is silence, because they only talk when talking needs to be done. So kind of interesting. I've had a quick look at it. I kind of read it diagonally. You can find it on the IARU website at iaru.org. It's called the Emergency Telecommunications Guide. And the link will be in the show notes. And this story came to me from Amateur Radio Newsline.
We do talk about amateur radio emergency communications a lot because that's one of the primary functions of the service. This is kind of interesting because a lot of the nets that go on, you know, on your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights or whatever, your local 2-meter nets that get together and a bunch of people usually just sit around and rag chew or whatever. But the purpose of those nets is generally for passing traffic and in a lot of cases, emergency traffic. Some of them are Aries based, some of them are Skywarn based, stuff like that. While generally speaking, not a lot of actual traffic gets passed on those nets, official traffic. It might be good to have this guide or just to read this guide or peruse it, if nothing else, so that when you get on your local nets, you have a good idea of how to properly transmit official traffic whenever necessary, not just to get together with a bunch of your pals and sit around and rag chew.
Yeah, it's about 100 pages, and it's got everything from, you know, basic net operation, emergency communication skills theory, some of the chapters working with the public, basic net operations, NCS operator practices, net control stations, net managers, handling messages, emergency activations, and even a chapter on the safety and survival. So, yeah, check it out. It's a neat little publication. I'm going to add it to my repertoire.
All right, sounds good. I think one thing that kind of gets lost in the ham radio world these days is proper operating procedure. People just like to memorize the question pools, get their license, get online, and have at it. Which was kind of interesting because yesterday I was hearing a rather nasty fight on the air on HF. It was great. It was on 15 meters. One guy was trying to run a net and another guy was just being a total jerk, swearing up and down. And they were both going to report each other to the FCC for improper practices and stuff like that. So I'm not sure what's going to come of that, but it was interesting listening anyway.
They'll report each other to the FCC and the FCC won't do anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Although they're a little bit more active, I have to admit, than our side of it, but that's okay.
We also have on our ham radio docket for the evening some handy resources, both video and audio, for ham radio operators. Some stuff that we may have mentioned before and some new stuff. The first one is The Ham College, which is a new show for those new to the hobby and wanting to become amateur radio operators. It was created by George Thomas, Whiskey 5, Juliet Delta X-Ray, and Tom Martin, November 5, Zulu, November Oscar, from Amateur Logic TV, which is another video podcast for ham radio, because they couldn't find any video resources for the new ham, which is kind of strange. It seems like that would be something that would be out there, but apparently not.
No, there's not a whole lot of video. There's starting to be more video resources, but there's not a ton. There's a lot more audio resources. ton of written stuff, but video resources, they're kind of few and far between. Aside from people who do stuff on their Facebook page, you know, this is my ham shack, this is my setup, but kind of structured sort of shows on how to, or, you know, Amateur Logic TV was one of, not the first, but one of the first to have some success. And so the good folks there decided to try Ham College, which I thought was a great idea. I thought this was phenomenal. And I'm a longtime fan of Amateur Logic TV. It's one of the first video resources that I discovered. And the hosts are quite, you know, somewhat charismatic. They put some humor in the show. You kind of get, if you look at the show regularly, you kind of get to like them as time goes on, you know?
Well, it's definitely something I'm going to check out. First episode of Ham College examines several topics, including early radio history, Elmering, building spark gap transmitters, technician exam questions and answers, and a bunch more. You can view this episode of Ham College on YouTube. All you have to do is go to YouTube and search for Ham College Episode 1, or the link to that will be on the website, and of course the link to Amateur Logic TV will also be on the website because you can view the Ham College episode there as well. Pete found this one earlier and posted it for us to relay to you among our other resources that we're going to talk about, and this one came from the Southgate Amateur Radio Club, which is where we get a lot of great news. So if you check out the Southgate ARC, they are a fine resource for ham radio information.
Yeah, they are, actually. They seem to be quite active. I'd like to go to one of their meetings one day.
Yeah, that would be cool. I don't even know where they're out of.
Southgate.
Yeah, well, that's helpful because that just tells me nothing. I don't know.
I thought it was in your neck of the woods.
I don't know if it's in my neck of the woods. It's probably in the States.
Let's see. Southgate is in, it's close to the Ozark National Forest, close to Little Rock. It's in Arkansas.
It's in Arkansas?
Arkansas. There you go. Arkansas.
All right.
So right south from Memphis.
Oh, they're way down by Memphis. Okay, so yeah, it's not too far away. It's about 5 hours from here. But
so there you'll probably be at one of their meetings before I will be.
Probably. And neither one of us are going to be there real soon.
not this week.
Yeah. Okay, so some other video and audio resources we have for ham radio operators. One is Welcome to Amateur Radio by Essex Ham. This short video provides an outline for those thinking of getting started in amateur radio and gives some information on what to expect on a UK amateur radio foundation training course. So this one is specific to United Kingdom amateur radio operation, and the Essex Ham is, of course, the Essex of the UK. You can find this at www.essexham.co.uk. So if you happen to be one of our British listeners, and I know we have many, or you're just wanting to get into amateur radio as a Brit, you might want to check that out and see what kind of information you can glean as you look for getting your ticket over there in the UK.
Yeah, or if you're just interested in finding out what it's like to be an amateur radio dude in the UK, of course. The foundation license, for those who don't know, is the basic license, the entry-level license in the UK.
Yes, that is correct. And I believe the foundation license is also the entry-level in the colony-type places like New Zealand and Australia. So
I believe so. I'd have to look that up, though, but I think you're right.
I first learned not that long ago, actually, that the Australian call signs actually have a 4-character suffix for the foundation license. So I didn't even think that was a thing. I thought it was all, you know, 2x3, 1x3, 2x2, et cetera, et cetera. But apparently the early...
That's because you're US-centric.
That's right. I'm US-centric. But the some places like that actually have 2x4 calls, where the first letter after the number is an F, indicating that it's a foundation license.
Foundation license is the entry into amateur radio in Australia as well. I confirm.
Okay, well, go ahead and read the next couple of resources that you found here.
A long time ago, I found Randy's page, K7AGE, who's been posting amateur radio-related videos for quite a few years. I'm not exactly sure how many. I'd have to look that up. But he's literally got hundreds of videos on all kinds of facets of ham radio. His most popular video series are Getting Started on 2 Meter FM, PSK 31. He's got a whole bunch of stuff. I actually got started on PSK 31 thanks to Randy, and Amateur Radio Satellites, of course. So you can check him out on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and check out K7AGE, and I'm on the page right now. And I want to see if he has anything that he's posted lately. Let's see, what was his latest posts? A year ago, 11 months ago, seven years. He's got some as far back as 7 years ago. So he's been doing this for quite some time. Another charismatic gentleman. And on the homepage, you'll see his little introductory video where he's speaking to a Ute. Operating ham radio. So there you go. Randy, K7AG, a wealth of information for new and not so new hams. I strongly recommend you guys check them out. I'm trying to figure out how I can get the view to see exactly how many videos he has posted. Yeah, he's got a
badger.
That's the official number. 8 years, and many of them have over 50,000 views. So this one on remote radio control station. Remote radio station control has got 106,000 views. So that one was quite popular, apparently. So yeah, all kinds of stuff. Moon bounce. He talks about moon bounce. Bluetooth audio radio interfaces. He's got a little series on his called Ham Radio Shack Chat, where he answers people's questions. Getting on 6 meters, operating portable, you know, pretty much anything you can think of, he's got a video on it. So if you're wondering how to do something, check out Randy's page.
Yep, and we have a link to his blog actually on the website. It's been there for a long time because just following the things he's into is really interesting, and there's a lot of great information over there.
Yeah, one of the videos that I saw, I can't find it right now, but he was operating from his hotel room, operating HF from his hotel room. He'd gone to some, because he travels a lot because of his job, and he went to the UK, and he was setting up a little station basically on the patio of his hotel room, which was really interesting. So yeah, it's a great resource. I highly recommend it.
All right, cool. So go ahead and give us the next one.
This next one is sort of a little introductory video. I thought it was interesting. It was produced in 2003 by Dave Bell, who many people know, W6AQ. Dave Bell, who's put together a bunch of ham radio resources, manuals, I believe, for people who are studying to become ham radio operators. And Bill Pasternak from Amateur Radio Newsline, who we mentioned before, WA6ITF, with the help of Silent Key Walter Cronkite, who was a licensed ham, KB2GSD, put together a little video called Amateur Radio Today. And it's a short video. It's I believe it's only about 10 minutes long. And basically, well, 6 minutes and 39 seconds, sorry. And basically, Walter Cronkite, who many people know for having done, being, was it ABC or CBS News anchor for many, many years. And he did a short little introductory on ham radio and its use today in emergency communications. So just for the archival interest, you know, it's not that old. It's 2003. But because it's Walter Cronkite, I just thought it was really, really interesting, and everybody should have a look at it.
Absolutely. That sounds interesting. It's something I want to check out. And since it's only 10 minutes long, I can squeeze it in between doing other stuff. So great, great stuff there.
6 minutes and 39 seconds.
There
you watch
go.
It 1.5 times.
Ooh. All right. Go ahead and give us this next one as well while you're at it. You're on a roll, so hit it.
I put together a whole bunch of video resources because we hadn't really talked about video resources in the past. So I thought some people are interested. This one is a weekly video podcast, which I thought was interesting. I came across this one quite by accident. It's called QSO Today. It's a weekly video podcast hosted by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG. And his other call sign, WA6IGR. He's been a ham radio operator since 1972. WN6VHV was his novice call sign. My goodness, this gentleman has a lot of call signs. So because of his love of the hobby, he decided to start this video podcast, the weekly video podcast, which is quite an endeavor for those of you who don't know. Putting together a weekly audio podcast is something, but a video is a whole other story in terms of the amount of work that you have to do to put it together. But his is basically interviews where he interviews people who have been in the hobby for a long time. So what he wants to do is preserve the stories of the many Elmers of amateur radio. So there are currently 27 episodes. Every episode is an interview with a ham radio Elmer, and the show began in June 2014. So easy to find, www.qsotoday.com. Or just Google QSO Today Weekly Video Podcast, and you'll be able to check that out. And there's a lot of interesting names in ham radio. I mean, there's nobody famous like, Lady Gaga or Marconi, but people in ham radio who have done some significant things. So check it out.
Yeah, I plan on checking that out. It looks interesting. And I did check out the page after you posted it in here, and he's got a nice-looking page. And the interviews that he's done looks like they're well produced, even if they're not like professionally produced, but it does look like they're going to be a great watch. And he's got quite a wide variety of amateur radio operators on there, so it should be very interesting to check out.
I've only checked out one episode. I plan on checking out many, many more.
That's cool. So everybody go check it out. So I'm going to add one to the list that you didn't have, and this one is a new project by Tom Medlin, Whiskey 5 Kilo Uniform Bravo, who has for a long time been a broadcaster. He's been webcasting HamFest for 11 years now. The webcast has viewers in over 150 countries and pulls in an audience of approximately 50,000 during Hamvention, because he broadcasts basically the entire Hamvention live on his website. Viewers have the opportunity during that live webcast to meet and chat with other hams from all over the world. And now he's got a project called the Amateur Radio Roundtable, in which he talks with other hams about products, technologies, operating practices, de-expeditions, RV expeditions, and all kinds of stuff. Every topic is different. He usually has two or three guests on per show, and it's really interesting. Plus, there's a live chat, so you can interact with the other people who are watching the show live, just kind of like you can with our show. He does basically the same thing, although his show is a video podcast. So you can actually see the things, and they do demonstrations and show builds and actual kit projects and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. Whiskey5KiloUniformBravo.com has a Facebook group for viewers to follow the webcast and to provide suggestions throughout the year and discuss all aspects of ham radio. The group is at www.facebook.com/groups/Whiskey5KiloUniformBravo. And Tom's main website is w5kub.com. You can also find out more about Tom at tmedlin.com. That's Tango Mike Echo Delta Lima India November.com. Archives of his broadcasts, like the Hamvention one and the Amateur Radio Roundtable, can be found on YouTube. And a link to the YouTube channel where you can get all of that will be in the show notes, of course, because it's one of those long, ridiculous URLs, and I'm not going to read it. But you can also search for Tom Medlin or W5KUB on YouTube, and you'll find it.
Yeah, I've heard about this guy. I've actually seen him in various other people's websites or videos, and yeah, he's been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, he's doing it for a very long time, since before podcasting was cool.
Even before there were Hamventions.
Well, no, not that long. but he said he's been a ham radio operator for 50 years, and he's been to, I think, something like 30-plus Hamventions, something like
wow.
that.
So, yeah. Just that is an accomplishment in itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to go to one.
Well, you got to change that, you know?
I know.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you, since that's the end of the ham radio topics, I'm going to let you run on into our one big open source topic for tonight. And the best Woo-hoo! Thing about this open source topic, it has nothing to do with open source, so try it.
Well, no, but it's it has nothing to do. But those who like open source will be cheering. Most of you will. This one I actually read a few weeks ago, and I hadn't put it in the show notes. But Microsoft, who everybody loves to hate, is announcing the end of Internet Explorer. I'll pause so everyone can applaud. Yes, Microsoft has made it official. When Windows 10 arrives, Internet Explorer is officially being retired. Yes, retired. But, you know, it is overdue. Internet Explorer has been left behind by pretty much everybody else on the market when it comes to technology. It doesn't even support extensions anymore, or never has, actually. Internet Explorer has largely endured thanks to people refusing to upgrade their computers. And I actually still have a very old computer with Internet Explorer on it. The machines we have at work still have Internet Explorer on it for some reason. The machine I'm looking at right now, for some reason, has Explorer on it by default. But anyways, they claim that it may hold up to 60% of the market share in browsers still. But an enormous chunk of that is thanks to IE8. Really, for many people, the old joke holds true. It's the browser you use to download the better browser. In its place, Microsoft is starting what it's calling Project Spartan, a newly designed web browser that will presumably be more like Chrome and Firefox. I say, why even bother? But that's all right. Spartan has some interesting features like annotating web pages and including Cortana functionality. But we doubt many grandparents will find it quite the same experience. IE isn't entirely dead, however. It can be included in some old versions of Windows 10 to ease enterprise customers into using a browser that isn't terrible. But IE itself won't come in the box. It's considering its reputation, and the end of it is probably for the best. So this came from Uproxx, UPROXX.com, which is a website that looks at technology news and trends. So I thought that was kind of interesting that IE is finally being retired. Long, long overdue indeed.
But it's going to be replaced by something bigger, kludgier, and worse.
Most likely. I don't know even why you would bother trying to outdo Chrome and Firefox. But who knows?
Well,
you can always make something better, so let's keep an open mind. You just never know.
The article does say that it might have some interesting features like the annotation and such. So,
that was my question. They speak of annotation, but they also speak of including Cortana functionality, and I have no idea what that is.
I have no idea what Cortana is as well. It's the first time I've heard of it. So, shall we all look up what Cortana is?
Let's look it up. Okay. Cortana functionality.
Oh, it's Siri for Windows phones.
Okay, yay. Yeah, I want that.
It's an artificial intelligence bot for Windows phones. So there you go. That's what Cortana is. For everyone like us who didn't know, now we know. And we are not enlightened because of our knowledge.
We probably won't be enlightened by Cortana either, so it's okay.
Probably not. But I've never been enlightened by Siri either. Or by the Android bot, whatever it's called.
I don't know.
The voice of Android.
There you go.
There is one. You use it when you say, okay, Google, remember? Or the Google bot or whatever you call it.
Well, okay, right.
It does the same thing as Siri does.
Mine doesn't talk to you. It can because it talks to Russ.
So you have the Helen Keller of it.
Your phone
know.
Talks to Russ? Aren't you jealous?
My phone talks, it talks to me.
Come here, sexy guy.
Yeah.
Right. Taking a left turn at Albuquerque again.
Okay, so anyway, that was the one open source, non-open source topic we had for the evening, because I've been frantically trying to dig up stuff for the show tonight, and I actually did find lots of stuff for the show, but nothing I could actually prepare in time to broadcast about, so that'll all be next time. So next time, stay tuned. We'll have a really good show.
Stay tuned for next week's open source show.
But anyway, and I only had one topic tonight for the Linux in the Ham Shack segment, and it is
But it's a good one.
It is kind of a good one because it's based on my own personal experience from this past weekend. I was a participant in the CQWPX contest, and I was in the contest for about 6 hours at the very end from 1800 UTC to 2359 UTC when the contest actually ended on, I guess that would have been Sunday night into Monday morning. So
wow, very good. Good on you. That's awesome.
Now, I wasn't actually planning on participating in this contest, but one of our listeners, John, EI7IG, was participating in an Ireland powerhouse station, Echo India 7 Mic. they go into this contest every year, and they have a multi-op station, and they're major contesters on the station. He was going to participate in that. He wanted to get me into their log. So I said, you know, sure, you know, tell me when you're going to operate, and I will be online then, and I'll see if I can get contact with your station. So I got there at the time he said he was going to be on, which was 11 a.m. my time on Sunday, and I logged into my computer, and I fired up my rig, and I got onto IRC, and I asked John what frequency they were on, and he said they were on 15 meters currently. They were broadcasting on 21.3395, which is where I went to, and I could hear them, but they were faint. Propagation from Ireland into my station here was apparently pretty bad. So I tried them a few times, and I could not get them at all. I could hear them, but there were lots of course, better stations and better propagation out there than from my little barefoot rig here in the shack. But the whole time I was listening for them and trying to get in was the first, you know, 45 minutes or so. I had my computer up, and I was using YFK test. Now, this is an application we've talked about before. It's an NCurses or a terminal-based contest logger written by DJ1 YFK. We've talked about this before, and I've kind of given an overview of the program, but I've never actually really used it in a contest. So this time I actually decided to go ahead and use it. So while I was trying to figure out how I was going to get in contact with the Ireland station, I started making other contacts. That actually kind of hooked me into getting more and more contacts.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. But it also gave me an opportunity to try out YFK test and use it for real, as opposed to just like noodling around and putting call signs into it, which was nice because it actually gave me the experience of how to use the contest logger. And it turns out that it is quite good at what it does. The only other time I'd actually used it, I had used it in the context of the only other contest that I had ever participated in, which is the ARRL's Field Day contest. The ARRL's Field Day contest has a different exchange than the CQWPX contest. For Field Day, you have to give your station call sign, and you have to give your station type, which is something like a 1 Delta or 1 Alpha or something like that, which is based on whether you're at home or running emergency power or whatnot. And then based on the band, mode, and other multipliers, you get a score. So the way the CQWPX contest works is it's kind of the same thing, but what you're supposed to give is a signal report, which everybody gives as a 5.9, regardless of what the signal report actually is, and it's programmed actually into YFK test to give 5.9 as a signal report. And then what you're supposed to give is a serial number, and that serial number is basically the number of contacts you've made in the contest. So the very first contact you make, the exchange that you give is 59001, and then the next one you make is 59002, so on and so forth. And then there are various multipliers and band stuff like that, and multi-op and, you know, stuff like that. And one nice thing about YFK test that I didn't know before that I do know now is that it actually calculates your total for you. It actually has the multipliers and the bonuses and the points for your exchanges built into the script for each contest. So as you're giving exchanges and making contacts, it's actually totaling up your points. So you can see, you know, where you're at. Now, for me, I was not getting a whole lot of points. I think I wound up with like 15,000 points by the time I was done. I had 95 total contacts. The fun part of it for me was getting contacts all over the world, basically. I had contacts everywhere. I worked 10 meters, 15 meters, 20 meters, and 40 meters, all single sideband phone. All you have to do with the YFK test is you start it up, tell it a log file to create, and I created CQWPX was the name of the file that I created. You put in your call sign information, your locator, your grid square, basically, and then it just gives you an interface where you have two fields. One is for the call sign you're receiving, and the other is for the exchange. And the exchange, like I said, for the CQWPX contest is a serial number. So you get the contact, you get the call sign, you get the serial number, you enter those two fields, you hit enter, and it works. There's a screen up above, and like I said, this is all done in a terminal because it's all NCurses based. So it's very simple and very easy to use whether you have an X Windows environment or not. I was using it in an X Windows environment, but you don't have to have one. as you were typing a call sign in, it would show you like a subset of your previous contacts in a window up at the top. So you could tell before you even finished typing the call sign whether you had made this contact before. And if you actually got the entire call sign typed in, it would show you immediately if it was a duplicate or not. And of course, it was smart enough to know that if you had the same contact on a different band, that it was not a dupe and so on and so forth. And of course, it was calculating your multipliers and everything because you get bonuses for contacting the same station across multiple bands and multiple modes and stuff like that. So, and it was doing all that for you in the background. And then you could actually just use the arrow up and down keys to go to a contact, a previous contact in your list, and make adjustments as necessary if you got a wrong serial number, if you typed call sign wrong or anything like that. I also had my YFK test hooked into HamLive. So it was actually reading the band and frequency data off of my rig, and it was reading the time data off of an NTP server. So all of the information that I had except for the call sign and the serial number were already entered for me, and I didn't have to do any of that. Worked perfectly, and then at the end of it, all you have to do is type in the call sign QUIT, Q-U-I-T, in the call sign field, and it's done. Super simple, super easy, really fast. The only thing that was slow about it was actually loading in the call sign data once you started up. If you want to actually see the contacts again after you've logged them, so you can go back through your logs and see what kind of, you know, contacts you made and your information, your score and all that stuff, to reload the contact data seemed to take an inordinately long time, and I'm not really sure why. I want to say that when we first talked about YFK test, we got a comment about the fact that there was some way to speed that up, but I don't remember what it is. So I'm going to have to go back through my notes and see if I can figure it out. But that was the only problem I had with it. The one other thing you have to do when you're using YFK test is when you first start it up, there is a splash screen that gives you some basic information about the operation of YFK test. You must read that information when you start it up, because everything you need to know about how to configure YFK test once it's running is in there. And it's basically a combination of alt keys, like alt H, alt O, stuff like that, alt C. You have to know what those keystrokes are to access any of the functions of YFK test. And if you just skip over that screen without reading it, you'll never know what those things are, because as far as I know, it's not documented anywhere else. So I'm just saying, if you're going to use YFK test for the first time, make sure you read that splash screen. And then you'll know everything you need to know about the program. And other than that, it's really easy. You can actually look at the contest definition files. Again, they're just text-based files. And if there's a contest that's not already set up for YFK tests, you could use one of those as a template to make your own, to create the ones that give you proper limits on your exchanges, proper bonus calculations, and score calculators and stuff like that. It's really, really simple, just all text-based. They tend to use regular expressions, so you'll want to be up on your regular expressions in order to do it properly, but it's really easy to use, and since the whole thing is open source, of course, all of it's right there for you. So that was my experience with YFK test, and I have to say I really liked it. And then I was talking to a gentleman today from Italy. He's an IZ3 call sign, and I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. I'll bring it up in a future podcast, because I'm going to talk about a product that we talked about in the past, and that's a product called Tucnak, T-U-C-N-A-K, which we found out is the Czechoslovakian word for penguin, and that is also a contest logger. We did, again, some preliminary looking into, you know, that project and what it can do, and I have just recently looked at it again. Tucnak version 3 has been put out, and it is, I gotta say, it's a wild looking application. It is this bizarre combination of DOS and X Windows, because it is an X application, but when you fire it up, it's very DOS-like. It has text-based drop-down menus, just like your old Midnight Commander and stuff like that. But in the midst of all that, it also has graphic representations of, like, your band and mode, all of your rig-based information, the frequency counter, your exchange counter for things that are based on serials. It's all graphically based, but it's all wrapped up in what looks like a DOS window. And it even gives you a signal monitor, a battery monitor, a waterfall display for PSK and CW and stuff like that. And it's all wrapped up in what looks like an NCurses window. It's really, really weird looking. But it's also got a million more features than YFK test does. So I really want to look at this and perhaps use it in another contest for myself. It's much harder to figure out and to get started with, but it also has way more features, because while YFK test allows you to read the information off of your rig as far as, you know, frequency and stuff like that, Tushnak actually allows you to set that information. Plus, you can configure Tushnak so that if you're going to be operating only on four bands in a certain mode within a range of frequencies, you can preset that so that your rig can never be set outside of those parameters while you're contesting, so you know you're always within the confines of the contest or within the confines of your own license restrictions, so you never wander out of band or anything like that. Plus, Tushnak can control the rig in other ways. You can do it for, like, sending CW messages, CW responses. It can do the decodes. Like I said, it does the waterfall. So if you're digital mode contesting, it has all of that built in. It's really cool. It's really full-featured, and I really want to do a really in-depth review of the project, because it seems like it's coming way up from when we reviewed it back in episode 106.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it's got some age on it now. There's really been a lot of work done on it, so I can't wait.
It was impressive back then, and I'm just listening to you, and I'm amazed. It sounds like this thing is really, it's really putting a lot of time and effort into turning this into a first class, the first rate logging system.
Yeah, it's just the user interface is a little bizarre, but once you kind of get used to it, it makes good sense. There's kind of a colliding of worlds between the X world and the DOS world, and I don't want to call it DOS, but a terminal based world. That sort of meshed together in this thing. And if you haven't seen it before, it's really hard to describe, but you should check it out because it's bizarre. But it's bizarre in a good way, and it is functional. So I don't want to say it's a bad thing, because it's not. It's just unusual, I will say.
Well, the more functionality something has and the more things it does, the more time you need to put into getting to know how to use it anyways, because you can't just do everything with the F4 key. That just makes sense. It's like learning anything. Once you get used to it, it's quite easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And this does take a little bit of getting used to, but it's clear that it will be easy to use once I understand it. And it is well documented. That's one nice thing about it, is very well documented. The stuff that I basically couldn't figure out right away by looking at it, I just went to the wiki pages, and within a couple of minutes, I understood what I needed to understand. Documentation on a project like this is always a very good thing. And considering that I think most, if not all, of the developers of that particular project don't speak English natively, the documentation is very good for an English speaker like me. So I'm happy about that.
Cool.
Anyway, there's two contest logger projects, YFK Test and Tushnak, the latter of which we'll definitely be revisiting here. I've been talking with a lot of people lately about contest loggers for Linux, because it's always been a topic for our show. And it's good to see that there are some options coming up and getting more advanced and more full featured as time goes on.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, that is our, first half of the show for tonight. So we're on to the music, and Pete, since you picked the music, I'll let you go ahead and introduce it.
I found this on Jamendo while perusing around. It's from a band called Fallen to Flux. This is new music, came out January 2015, just a couple of months ago. The album is called From the Outside, and the tune is called From the Outside Looking In, 4:17. The band is from the UK, from London specifically. And I thought this was kind of bringing us back to the Linux in the Ham Shack roots in terms of musical styles. Kind of struck a chord with me. So here you go, From the Outside Looking In by Fallen to Flux.
are mine.
Well, Pete, I have to say that was quite a good selection from you, and not one of the kinds you usually pick.
I thought you'd like that.
I did like that, actually, quite a bit. I listened to it before the show, and I was happy to put that in there because it was very good.
Cool. I hope our listeners enjoyed it, too. But like I said, it kind of brought me back to when I first started listening to LHS, Lennox in the Ham Shack, way before I had the opportunity to become a co-host. And I thought it was kind of cool. And it's new music.
Yes, new music.
Courtesy of our friends at Jamendo.
And courtesy of our friends at Fallen to Flux, who decided to create that song.
There you go. Our good buddies.
Our good buddies over at Fallen to Flux, yeah. All right. So anyway, we're going to move on from the music. Our excellent selection for tonight, thanks, Pete, to segment 4, which is announcements and feedback. And the first bit of announcement or feedback is an announcement, and that is about the show that we mentioned before, the Amateur Radio Roundtable with Tom Medlin, W5KUB.com. And I mention this because tomorrow night, if you're listening to this show live, I am going to be a guest on the Amateur Radio Roundtable. And I'm going to talk.
How did you pull that off?
Hey, I'm good.
There you go.
Anyway, Tom invited me to be on the show. We can talk about the circumstances of that. If you actually watch the show, probably. Basically, we're going to talk about Linux in the Ham Shack, both as a concept and as a show. He said I'm going to get about 20 minutes on the program. So if you want to check out W5KUB.com, you will see me there. And you'll actually see me there because it's a video podcast. So you will literally see me, which you don't normally do.
So it's live.
It is live. That's right. Wow. It is broadcast live on his website, W5KUB.com. And there is a chat room there. So you can chat with me and Tom and all the other people who are participating in the live broadcast. And then, of course, it will be put up on YouTube so you can check it out afterwards. So all the people who don't know about this, you know, by tomorrow night will be able to see it later. So anyway, check it out. Quite apart from the fact that I'm going to be on the show, make sure to check out, you know, the Amateur Radio Roundtable because it's a very cool show. We also had a mention on Twitter from Donovan Bali, who's a guy who likes to suggest music for our show, and I haven't played any of his suggestions lately, but I'm sure we'll get back to them eventually.
Maybe that's why he's not giving us any more suggestions.
Maybe not. But anyway, he says, sorry the Dayton Indiegogo was an indie stop. Brightside, I wasn't going, so now you won't miss me. Or not.
Yeah, that's too bad that didn't work out.
Yeah, it is too bad. So, unfortunately, we won't see everybody this year, but maybe next year. We also had a comment on episode number 142 from Wayne, Kilo 9 Whiskey Kilo Juliet. And he says, hey, Russ and gang, a bit of a correction on GQRX. I'm running Jesse, which is Debian Jesse, by the way, and it most certainly is in the repo, although my deep-seated hatred of Pulse Audio has caused me to build it without Pulse. But the one in the repo works fine. Good app. Here's another one for you to try. GitHub.com/KPReed/ShinySDR. And we did mention a Shiny SDR on a previous episode. So we already knew about it, but thank you anyway. Lets you run the dongle in a WebKit browser, Chrome or Safari, either remotely or local. You can even run multiple receivers in the same tab, even different modes at the same time. Well, how about that? Since the SDR is just a receiver, it allows you to access the chip multiple times per interface, which is great. The dev is very helpful, that is, the developer of Shiny SDR, and responsive. He also tells us to keep up the good work, which we plan on doing, I believe. We're not going to get
badger
like all of a sudden.
I hope not.
I hope not, too. I had to throw badger in there just so we can get a badger. We haven't had a badger in a long time. Anyway, we also had a comment via Facebook from Petro, Victor Alpha 2, X-Ray Mike X-Ray, who was in the chat room until very recently. Yeah. Apparently it was late for him and he had to go.
And just down the road from me.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah, so. What's really bad is Russ had no clue this even existed until I said, hey, go look at Facebook.
Yeah, that's right. I don't do Facebook, so I had to be told about this, but now I know. Anyway, on Facebook, Petro says, hi, guys. Paren obligatory ego stroking. I love the show. I look forward to every show. I love how it's about my two favorite things, Linux and ham radio. No, penguins and meat.
Aren't they just one thing?
Well, not according to Petro.
You could eat penguins.
Yeah, I've heard you can. I don't know if they're any good or not.
If you want to.
I guess. He says, I have Harrison to thank for hearing about LHS. Well, thank you, Harrison, for introducing Petro to LHS. Very cool. Petra says, I got a question for you all. I want to try using Echolink on my Fedora desktop. While doing a yum search, I found two choices, Echo Linux and Qtel. Which do you recommend? What about running a node off my Linux box? Drop your knowledge and your pants. No, okay. So here's my thought on whether to use Echo Linux or Qtel, since no one's going to chuckle at what I just said.
I did.
Yeah, you were way too late. That was like a second and a half far too late. So.
Oh, come on.
In all seriousness, the difference between Echo Linux and Qtel is huge. Basically, Echo Linux is a library. It's a text-based CLI interface into Echolink and very, very user-unfriendly. As a matter of fact, the website for Echo Linux states that it is very, very user-unfriendly. For the user friendliness, what I would do is I would install Qtel. It's what I use. It's part of the SVX Link package written by SM0SVX, a great Swedish ham who has created the Linux interface to Echolink. And you should definitely use it. Anytime I want to use Echolink, I use Qtel. I always build the Qtel and SVX Link from source, but if Fedora has it packaged in the repo, by all means, do a yum install Qtel. The only thing that I don't like about Qtel, and this is kind of a weird thing, and maybe it's just because I don't know how to do it, but you can't search for a conference or a link. As far as I know, you have to go through and browse the list to find something, which to me is a real pain in the ass. You can search for it outside of it. Like you can go to echolink.org and search for a link. And then once you know the call sign, you can go to the list and find it. But there is no way that I'm aware of in Qtel to actually put in a search box that you want to look for, you know, V2XPL or whatever, you know, whatever it is you're looking for. Like the Android client and the iPhone client and all of the other clients that I've seen, including the Windows version of Echolink, actually provide a way to do search. Qtel does not. And like I said, this may be a function of the fact that it really doesn't do it, or it's a function of the fact that I don't know how to do it. That's the only problem I have with Qtel. Other than that, it works flawlessly. Configuration is super simple. All you have to do is enter your call sign information and your audio interface information. It does support Pulse Audio, but you don't have to use that. You can use OSS. You can use ALSA. It works with everything. And it's really easy to get up and running, and I use it anytime I want to use Echolink. Qtel, definitely the way to go. That's my definitive answer on whether to use Echolinux or Qtel. Anyone else want to weigh in on it?
I haven't been running Echolink on any of my Linux machines, and it's on my to-do list. On my very, very long to-do list is to try to set up a Linux Echolink box.
Well, if you're just using the client side of it and not setting up a radio interface, it's really simple.
Understand. And I'd actually like to set up a node or a linking station.
It's also very simple to do that. I've actually had SVX Link running on a Raspberry Pi as a host controller.
I remember that.
Just using Qtel, you should do that because it really won't take much of your day.
Oh, I know. It's like I said, it's a very long to-do list.
Okay. We'll put it at the top.
All right. I'm erasing it and putting it there now.
All right. Yeah, I don't think you're doing that at all.
No.
No, I know. I'm psychic.
But I'm not taking it off the to-do list. It's okay. Still on the to-do list.
You know, because if you actually start using Echolink, we could probably talk to each other.
Well, I use Echolink, just not on Linux.
Oh.
I have a node, V2XPL-L, for anyone who wants to...
Is it on all the time?
Anytime. The linking station is on all the time. I'm not on all the time, however, because I unfortunately have a job.
Well, maybe we need to work a sched.
But we could, absolutely.
All right. Well,
so
we'll,
but yeah, we'll my link is up 24/7. VE2XBL-L.
If anybody sees my note online, I don't have an L or an R or anything like that, but I am connected to Echolink, you know, every once in a while to chat with other folks. Anybody sees me on there, by all means, hit me up. We'll have a QSO on Echolink.
We should do another, you know, you were doing for a while. We did a couple of Google Meets.
Yeah, I would like to do that.
A Google meeting that's kind of hooked into Echolink and Skype and do a cross-platform kind of newfangled technology kind of thing. That would be interesting.
Yeah, get with me on Echolink. We'll set that up.
Yeah, we could do that.
All right.
That would be cool. Get our listeners to join in and have a party.
Sounds like fun. And the last thing I have on the announcements front is a social networking site that I was told about via our Google Plus community. I don't remember who mentioned it because I didn't bother to write it down, but it's something called socialhams.net, and it's at www.socialhams.net, of course. And it's supposed to be a ham radio community for social networking. And I really don't know anything about it, but I was told that there are lots of people who are using it. I checked recently, and there's over 1,000 users on there. A lot of them are in other countries. So if you want to hook up outside of actual ham radio use with other ham radio operators, peer and abroad, socialhams.net might be the place for you. But don't, you know, we're not sanctioning or saying this is a great site or anything like that, or that they're not going to steal your personal information or anything. It's just something suggested by another listener. So we're putting it out there. And if you want to check it out, go for it. Socialhams.net. Be warned.
Be warned.
Yeah, that's right. Be warned. If this, you know, if this is a scam, then, you know, we didn't tell you about it.
Yeah, and he just gave me a weird look about it.
That's so. Because you were giving me a weird look across the table.
They've just reached 1,000 members.
Yeah, and the text in a lot of the posts over there is not good English, so I'm assuming that they're all, you know, not native English speakers.
So it's, what, a lot like Facebook?
Oh. Well, kind of like that, yeah.
I mean, there's so many social media and groups and things like that nature. I mean, just on Facebook, there's, you know, hundreds of ham radio groups. I'm a member of a few of them, the ones that, you know, speak to me the most. But, I mean, there's so many.
Right.
So, you know, they're not just on Facebook. They're in a whole bunch of different places.
Yep. That is very true.
Yeah, right. On the featured members on the homepage right now, Bermuda, Malaysia, Netherlands, Germany, United States, and Germany. So there you go. Maybe that's why the and Australia, sorry. Maybe that's why some of the English is, you know, not right. Fluent. And that's okay.
That is very much okay. Anyway, check that out if you want to find yet another social media network for ham radio operators. Not like there aren't a few already. There you go.
No, but it's good to have a choice, though, because not every social media appeals to everyone. So the more there are, well, the more chances that you'll find the one that speaks to you.
All right, so we're done with announcements, we're done with feedback, and we're going to move on to the best part of the show, as it always is. And you always look at me stupid, like I have no idea what I'm talking about. But this is, everyone loves Cheryl's Recipe Corner.
I do.
I do, and even Mr. Burns does.
Whatever.
So, anyway, take it away.
Okay, well, this week I decided to share my recipe for the BLT pasta salad. Spring is upon us here in the United States, of course. Which means people are going to be barbecuing. Yay!
In other parts of the Northern Hemisphere.
And yeah, in other parts of the Northern Hemisphere. That's very true. So it's just some bacon and some mayonnaise and some tomatoes and some pasta, and that's pretty well it. So mix it all together, and it's very yummy.
This actually is a very good recipe. Real simple to make. Takes like 5 minutes to throw everything together and stir it up. Chill it for like an hour just to make it good.
Yeah, a couple hours, yeah.
Yep, and good stuff. So there you go. So on to the social media roundup.
Ooh.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. I got to get my git fiddle, and we'll have a social media roundup.
All right.
I think I should leave now. You're scaring me. Well,
you were the one who told me about the git fiddle in the last episode. I had never heard that before. So
the git fiddle.
Was that in the last episode?
I think it was the last episode, yeah.
I don't know if that was in the episode or that was just a discussion we were having.
No, it was actually in the episode, I'm pretty sure, because I just finished editing it.
I see.
Anyway, go.
This week, donations and subscriptions, we have Petro Katsarkis.
That's VA2XMX, who was in the chat room.
He's yearly and he is new.
Very new. Very, yep. Very new.
And that was all thanks to Harrison, right?
Yep. Yep. All thanks to Harrison.
On Facebook, we have Richard Morton and Cam Coble. Google Plus, we have Ferdinand Dimbach, Resistance Hams, John Anderson, and Andrew Pounce. On Twitter, we have W8MRLTADM, Cobble Cam, and obviously they hit us up on Facebook too. Paul OPY1JP.
All right, let me correct that one because it's kind of confusing, but I believe it's Paolo Papa Yankee 1 Juliet Papa.
Okay. And KD2IDF. And nobody joined our YouTube channel, nobody joined our mailing list, and nobody bought anything. That seems to be an ongoing thing.
It's definitely a trend. Yeah. So, all right, well, we're down to the bottom of the show. It's the very dregs of our program, which means I'm about to hit the outro music and get us on out of here, unless anyone else in the chat room has anything they want to say, or if Pete wants to chime in. Or
I've chimed in enough.
You've chimed in enough? All right. So we'll just we'll pause briefly while we look at the chat room and see if anybody else has anything to say, because I know there's a bit of a delay between what I say and what people actually hear. And then when Ted gives us the thumbs up and says, I'm leaving, we'll just sign. Richard always used to read the people in the chat room, but I know that a lot of the people who are in the chat room aren't actually here. Ted says bye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I do know that in the chat room, we had Scott at 8VSI. He was definitely here. We had Taj. He was definitely here earlier. Victor Alpha 2 X-ray Mike X-ray. He was definitely here. I believe Harrison was definitely here earlier. Victor Echo 2 Hotel Kilo Whiskey. VE3 SRE is definitely here. Whiskey Alpha 0 Echo India Romeo is definitely here. That's Ted. And Todd says he's still here. Jay Lindsay often listens to the show, but usually when he's listening to the show, he actually says something. Anyway, that's all the people that I'm aware of in the chat room who are actually listening to the show, and no one's saying that they have anything they want to talk about. So you know what that means.
We're out of here.
Yeah, it means the show's over. All right, so I'm going to push the button and start the outro music. No, it's over. Yes, that's true. But we'll be back in 2 weeks. And if you want to see me again, you can see me tomorrow night. On whiskey5kub.com.
Yeah, but the thing is, nobody's going to get this until after you've already been
I'm going to post
show.
It on the website. But see, no one reads the website either. See,
no,
this is
No, it's just Pete and I that don't look at the website.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Anyway, let's get out of here.
Okay.
So I push the button, and that means the music is playing, and that means that we're going to, like, go away for a couple of weeks. But we'll leave you with this. You can become an ambassador to LHS. You can represent us at an upcoming Linux Fest or Ham Fest. We would love you. We would love you if you did that. Or something like that. Anyway, you can also leave us feedback. You can do it by email at info@lhspodcast.info. You can do it by voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW, which is 1-909-547-7469. You can do it by Facebook, you can do it by Google+, you can do it by Twitter. However you do it, we will get your feedback, and we love feedback, so send us some. Our IRC channel is #LHSPodcast over on the Freenode Network. Subscribe to our mailing list, buy some of our merchandise at cafepress.com or printfection.com. Both of those are #LHSPodcast. You can also help out the show by going to our website, lhspodcast.info, and clicking on the sponsored ad link on the right-hand column of that page. That doesn't cost you anything except a couple seconds of time, and every little bit gives us some money in our coffers to keep the show going. You can listen to us live every other Monday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's Tuesday mornings, 0200 Zulu time. Our recording schedule, our countdown timer, our links to the podcast, our links to the Etherpad, our links to everything you ever wanted to know about our show is on the website. And that website, again, is lhspodcast.info. So thank you to all of our listeners, those of you who are listening from the past, from the present, and from the future. We appreciate you all. This is Russ, K5TUX, along with Pete, VE2XPL, and my YL, Cheryl, across the desk from me. And you have been listening to episode number 144 of Linux in the Ham Shack. We appreciate each and every one of you, and we hope to see you again here in 2 weeks' time. Catch you later, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
Be mentally deficient to do this job, but it sure helps.